Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Welcome to B-Side Stories, Te Whanganui Atara. You are listening to B-Side Stories on Wellington Access Radio, 106.1 FM. And it didn't really matter that I squeaked my microphone before because it wasn't on. It's always got to be something. I'm Sadie, and we are welcoming back to the studio Vixen Temple today. Hi again, Vixen.
Kia ora, tēnā koe for having me. I'm really excited to be back. That was a very Mercury retrograde thing to happen just there.
Is that what we're in?
Yeah, it's an astrological thing. It's big on Mercury retrograde. Mercury governs technology, so when it's retrograde, there's going to be a lot of technological errors.
It was Mercury retrograde last time you came in, because I remember I screwed something up that time too.
Very fitting.
So I will give you a little intro. So Vixen is a Takatapui sex witch, sex work activist, writer, producer and performance artist, amongst other things, determined to burn the patriarchy.
Yes.
And last time we spoke to you was about the Catherine Mansfield show, The Magic of Her Body.
Yes, yeah.
Which is coming back. Is it next week?
Or yes, next week, next Wednesday to Saturday, Wednesday and Thursday. We're doing a 6 o'clock show. Thursday night sold out, but we still have tickets available on the Wednesday night. And then Friday and Saturday, it is a 6 o'clock show and an 8 o'clock show. And the Wednesday opening night show, there's also a Q&A at the end that folks are welcome to stay behind at the Catherine Mansfield show
house.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to that, just getting a bit more of Catherine Mansfield's knowledge out there, because she's just such a iconic sapphic and we just love her so much. So any excuse to talk more about her, we'd love to.
Yeah, so that was the show that you and Karen Pollock worked on, and I came along to it last time. I was really lucky to snag one of the last tickets because that sold out so quickly. And it's a great opportunity for anyone who missed out to grab a ticket this time by going to I think if you go to Catherine Mansfield House, it's probably the easiest way to find it.
Yes, it's on the website. You can also check out Heritage New Zealand's Instagram or my Instagram at vixentemple.666.
Great. It's just so neat being in the house as well. And what a great cozy place that's going to be in midwinter to go and hang out for an evening.
Such gorgeous, intimate vibes. And we have these gorgeous lights that have different colours for each room. And since it's not daylight savings anymore, we'll really get the full immersive theatre experience. So it's a nice, intimate setting. You get to come, have a sit, listen to some sapphic musings. They're very relatable for someone of her time. And we highly encourage you to come along and learn about your sapphic whakapapa, because, you know, I think I said last time, we hear a lot about gay men, which, love that, slay. But it would be really cool to hear more about lesbians and sapphic women. So we're really honoured and excited to be bringing that back. And thank you to the Peter Rule Foundation for sponsoring us again. We're very grateful for that, because the arts are severely underfunded. So appreciate it. So yeah, please come check it out. It's going to be a really gorgeous event, and I'm really excited to get to embody Catherine Mansfield again.
So it seems like you're a very versatile performer.
Oh, that's saying one thing. Yes, it's we were saying when we were off air before, I've got ADHD and it manifests in many ways. I wear many hats. I can't just do one thing. I need to do multiple things. So, yeah, I wear many hats.
Because you do burlesque and drag and pole dancing and stripping.
Yeah, all sorts of things. A poet, comedy, burlesque, drag.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Fringe Festival,
I did a show for Fringe Festival. It was Just the Tip, A Stripper's Guide to Strip Club Etiquette. It was my way of using comedy to educate the general public on how to mostly not act in the strip club. lots of things. I'm an attention whore. I'm a Leo sun. I just like any time I can be on the stage and can get my mana out there, I'll do it.
You're using it for good though.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Kia ora. I like to think so. I'm also an activist, and I think it's just part of who I am as a person. I'm very passionate about the causes that I care about. Burning the patriarchy, it's not just a catchphrase for me. It's like my kaupapa for life. I really hate patriarchy and white supremacy and what it's done to so many of the communities that I belong to and the people I love. So, you know, I'm a radical, angry goth, and I just just try to use art and the arts is a way to get that mana out there, because arts have always, there's this quote by Tony Cade Bombodi, the role of the artist is to make the revolutionary irresistible. And I love that, and I really try to do that with my art, just invoke and inspire people to get up and change shit, because shit needs to change.
Yeah. At what age did you realise you needed to destroy the patriarchy?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so I swear I came out the womb with a microphone being like, burn the patriarchy. No, so I'd say from quite an early age, I noticed a difference between how men and women were treated. I was sexualized from quite a young age as well, and that's something that I think I've always been conscious of, but I'd say I really became radical in my teenage years, especially around the same time I started exploring witchcraft. Really growing up with a single working class mother in Otupoti, Dunedin during the early 2000s, and some things happened to my whānau that I can't quite fully get into, but, you know, I really got from an early age to see the way that patriarchy protects predators and horrible people, especially men. Being also tangata whenua, just seeing how especially my Māori side of the whānau were treated in the society. And just, yeah, I think from a teenager I was really radicalized, and just as I got older and explored my craft a bit more and tried to tell my story, it was always about, yeah, it always just came back to burning the patriarchy and trying to really inspire others to join me on my quest, because I can't do it alone. So please join me on my quest to burn the patriarchy.
So you were born down in Otupoti?
Yes, born and raised by my single mother, who I love. She's such an ally. She's so cool. She's so straight and normal, and I'm so queer. And but she's such an ally to me. So yeah, grew up in Otupoti, Dunedin. Graduated university, started working as a stripper, and then I moved up to Tāmaki Makaurau for a few years, and now I've been living in Ponaki for the past 3 years, and I love it.
Do you feel like this is home now?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. So when I was a teenager, and especially during uni, people would always say to me, like, you're so Wellington. And I was like, why? Like, is Wellington like an angsty goth teen? And I moved here. I was like, oh, it is.
Yeah.
I love Wellington. Honestly, it's like a bigger, queerer Otupoti. And it's so political, obviously, because it's the capital and parliament is here. But I have never felt so surrounded by so many like-minded people who share the same causes as me and spew the same mana that I spew. And it's just so nice to be in a city as radical as Ponaki. Growing up in Otupoti, I was sort of known as like the angry feminist, and I was bullied a lot. I wasn't always understood. And in many ways, I'm quite grateful I got to experience years of being a misfit. But it actually feels quite cool to, in Wellington, feel almost like the normie, because everyone here is weird, and it's great. I love this city so much. It is my home. It is definitely my home.
I kind of love that. I'm just writing that down. That everyone here is weird.
Everyone here is weird. Yeah,
go Wellington. I feel like weird is one of those words too that has a deeper meaning from the past, and I can't remember what it is. Mm. I actually studied Old English, so I ought to know.
But I love that. I love Old English. I love Old English. Like, apparently I learned this from Girls of the Playboy Mansion. Is it true that sausage wallet was how they used to call someone a slut? I don't know if that's true.
But that's so awesome. Okay, I'm going to write that down to look up. Sausage wallet.
Sausage wallet.
I suggest you can withdraw many sausages from
your
wallet.
Well, I am a professional sausage wallet, so.
God. Wow. Let's talk about that.
Let's talk about it.
You're giving me an opening. So how did you get into sex work?
Yeah, so I got into sex work just after I'd graduated. No, actually, it was my final year of university in Otupoti. I was studying a Bachelor of Arts, and about a year prior, I was diagnosed with celiac disease. So that was starting to really impact my ability to, you know, I was working, studying full-time, working part-time. I couldn't afford my gluten-free groceries. And so I used to, at the time, I had an Instagram where I would cosplay, and I was constantly getting messages from men asking me if I would do nudes. And so one day I was just like, screw it. And I used to have this was pre-OnlyFans day. So I used to have this pay-to-access Snapchat where once a week I would do a strip show as a cosplay character. Harley Quinn was quite a popular one of mine. And yeah, I just started doing online sex work. And then just after I finished my last exam at uni, I became a stripper because I started working full time. I assistant managed JJ's, and I realized, man, full time work is not for me. I can't handle it. It's not what I want to do with my life. So I thought, you know, what's a job where I can get paid to perform? And I thought, oh my gosh, I could be a stripper. So I started stripping. I've also done sugar babying, and I currently work as a full service sex worker when my body allows it, being disabled. Sex work is a very accessible industry for people with disabilities. And I, at the moment, I mostly just do online and face-to-face full service when I can. I loved being a stripper and I miss it very much, but unfortunately from a lot of the activism I've done, I've been blacklisted from a few of the clubs in this country. So, hey, they're lost, but it's all right. So I love being a sex worker because you get to, you know, choose your own hours and there's no cap on my earning potential, which as a disabled person, I think is quite a, it does make me feel empowered in the sense that for the last 7 years of my life, I have been able to earn a living for myself and survive and support myself through that. And I love it. I it's not something I'd recommend for everyone, but I enjoy it. And as long as I enjoy it, I'll keep doing it.
Do you feel like it's an aspect of the performance that you do?
Oh, absolutely. So I have a theatre degree, but I'd say I learned way more about performing in the strip clubs than I did in my theatre studies. When I was in the strip clubs, I realized I was a drag queen because I realized, oh my God, like strippers are just drag queens. We're just exaggerating femininity and performing femininity because so many sex workers and strippers I know aren't all cis women. I had a lot of stripper friends that were non-binary or wanting to transition to masculinity one day. I just realized I am performing like hyper femininity. And so when I get to do drag, it's in a way that I don't have to do it to, you know, try to be making money through like quote unquote the male gaze. I can really explore my femininity in a more monstrous way. But I'd say spending years in the strip club, even now if I'm doing an act that's not about stripping, I'll still end up shaking my ass somehow. Like the stripper in me will always come out. But I'd say stripping for the years, it taught me stage presence. It taught me how to hypnotize an audience and make every person in that room feel like you're performing just for them.
Were you nervous the first time?
No, with the first time I stripped?
Yeah.
No. Oh my God, I couldn't wait. I was so excited. I was more nervous that I wouldn't make money, but it was the first shift I got to work, they caught me on a slow night just to not throw me into the deep end. And it was a Wednesday night in Utiputi, Dunedin. So I think I made $90 that entire shift. But I remember my first stage spot, I danced to Time by She Wants Revenge. And I mean, you could not pay me to rewatch it because I know it was probably awful, but I, from a young age, kind of suspected that one day I would become a stripper. It's something that I remember being 8 years old and watching the Moulin Rouge and being like, okay, like I could do that. I see that for myself. And I, as a teenager, always wanted to do burlesque. So I was just, honestly, I'm a bit of an exhibitionist. I was really excited to get my tits out. I couldn't wait to shake my ass on stage and I had a lot of fun, but you could not pay me to watch my first stage spot because I know it would be so bad, I've gotten better over the years. But no, I was very excited. I was more just nervous that I wouldn't make any money and no one would tip me.
So is the money only from tips when you get?
Yeah, so basically how it works in the strip club, we are independent contractors, so we don't have an hourly rate. So we get paid in tips and lap dances, and each club operates differently. Some clubs let you keep 100% of the tips, but most of them don't. And through the work that I've been doing with Fired Up Stilettos, in recent years, especially post-COVID, clubs have gotten a lot more stingy because they lost a lot of money in COVID. So they started to increase the rate of how much they took and decreased how much we would get. So when I was working in Utiputi, I think they took 30% of tips and then 40% of our lap dance rates. For me, I think that tips should 100% go to the dancers because they're tips. And honestly, I think all the money should go to the dancers because the clubs are making money on door fees and the bar. But in a way, you know, they explained it to us like, well, we're taking this money because we're providing you with the venue to provide your services at. With that, it's meant to involve like security and everything. But as I learned over the years, strip club management can be very exploitative and abusive, and they don't see us as human beings. They see us as walking dollar signs, and they take and take and take from us. So, yeah, when you go to the strip club, I would recommend tipping in real money because they let us keep 100% of that. And, yeah, let us tip in real money. Just don't ever go to the strip club without money because we don't get paid to be there. We're actually paid to be there. And I always say that to people, if you're going to go to the club, make sure you at least have enough to tip every dancer, like, $10 and then go unless you are willing to get out more money. Book a lap dance, you know. We're not getting paid to be there. We pay to be there.
You pay to be
we pay
allowed to be
there.
In the club.
Yep. Wow. There are even some clubs that charge you a bond. So when I worked at Showgirls in Tāmaki Makaurau, I had to pay a $1,000 bond just to work there, and they take that out of my pay every shift. And it's ridiculous. So yeah, we are paying to be there.
What's the bond for?
You tell me. Honestly, I don't fucking know. They said it was to cover any damage you would cause, like the same way landlords have bonds. It was just them stealing money. They were just stealing our money, because in Showgirls and Tāmaki Makaurau, I had to threaten them with legal action just to get my bond back, because they weren't going to give it back to me. They are just stingy money hoarders. There's actually no ethical business reason to have a bond other than just taking more money and to assert power over us. So there's no reason to have a bond. It's ridiculous. It should be outlawed. It should not be. I don't think it is legal, actually, but you know.
Yeah, it's so tough, eh? When, like, I don't, obviously not, I'm not a lawyer, so the difference between being a contractor and being an employee, and
yeah, it just doesn't feel ethical to me. Like, there's no other industry where you're being charged a bond to work. I don't hear it happen to tradies or tattoos.
Whenever I've done contract work,
right? You're
to
not
go
getting
and do yeah. office admin. I no. haven't been asked to pay a bond.
No, but it's just that's the misogyny and the racism and the xenophobia that these club managers really bank on, is that it's whorephobia, really. They know that the general public doesn't care about strippers, so they know that when we go to the media or go to people and talk about it, no one will care, so they get away with it. That's why I think the work that Fired Up Stilettos has done has been quite profound to bring that to the media's knowledge. And now I think most people I interact with, quote-unquote civilians, us sex workers call non-working people, seem to have a more better understanding of that and are more riled up about it and are starting to become... I don't know, see strippers as the human beings we are. So can't buy to Fired Up Stilettos for that, because...
Yeah, so tell me a bit more about Fired Up Stilettos.
Yes. So Fired Up Stilettos formed 2.5 years ago. It's a group of... So it's currently a collective of strippers fighting for the rights of adult entertainers here in Aotearoa. And it's started by Calendar Girls and here in Ponaki, fired 19 of their dancers who collectively signed this... petition, I think, just to bring issues that they were having to their management in terms of them increasing how much money they were taking from tips and lap dances, and just, you know, general health and safety stuff at the workplace. And they all got mass fired. So they started protesting. They formed Fired Up Stilettos. We've since spoken at Parliament multiple times. We've hosted multiple protests where we pole danced on Parliament grounds, which was iconic. We made history that day. No one's ever done that before. And... We've been hosting these events called Kick Up a Fuss, which are strip club takeovers, just showcasing how easy it is to manage strippers without fining them or exploiting them. I used to be the event producer for Fired Up Stilettos. I'm not anymore. I've passed that hat off to someone else. But yeah, I loved doing those events. It was really quite cathartic for me to just see how easy it is to run strip clubs without abusing and fining the workers. It's really easy. These managers, like, if they think it's really that hard, they're just not fit for the job.
Are there any ethical strip clubs in New Zealand?
Yeah, well, it's quite hard. The word ethical, I guess, is quite, you know, loose and nuanced. But I'd say I've heard really good things about the club in Queenstown. I think it's owned and operated by an ex-stripper. Correct me if I'm wrong, people. The club in Queenstown, I've heard really good things. There are definitely clubs in the country that... There's very few clubs that would still hire me, but the ones that would, I'd say, are all good. But I would not recommend people working at Calendar Girls. That place is owned by an absolute scumbag.
Hey, on that note, I just realised the last time when you came in, we didn't get to play your song. So
yes, let's have a boogie.
It's a funny place to stop, but I was just like, wait a minute, we're going to do it again. Let's play a song.
Yay!
Shall we go? I had never heard of a person that you told me about, Kiki Rockwell, before.
Yes.
And then I read a little bit about her, and she's super interesting.
She's incredible. I love Kiki Rockwell so much. Listen to her. She makes fantasy folk music. And fun fact about the song we're about to play, I was in the music video for it. So go check it out on YouTube. Streamer. Oh, she's incredible.
You know what? I watched it like in a hurry, and I was thinking, it wouldn't surprise me if Vixen's in this video somewhere.
Yeah, I was one of the witches in the background dancing and burning. And yeah,
I sort of peered at it.
Yeah. No, go, please go follow Kiki Rockwell. She's incredible. She's a Kiwi based artist, and yeah, she makes fantasy folklore music, and she's just incredible. So
yeah, so there's the witch connection there. Yeah. As well.
So here's one of her songs.
Okay, yeah, this is Same Old Energy.
Oh cool, thank you so much for letting me talk so much about sex work. That's so rad. I can hear it.
Mass hysteria and false accusation of strange domination. Got no explanation. This fear plays the nation. Your whole congregation say they should be caged in this woman of Satan. Yes, there's masturbation, some ego inflation. There really is shadows just congregating. So act on temptation and live by sensation. This is the reason you came to creation. Rise up, oh flame, come join the game. You started a frenzy, but we'll take the blame. A bare chest to tame, goes by no name. Their arsenal's empty, you'll take out his shame.
Welcome back to B-Side Stories on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. That was Kiki Rockwell, so cool. Another witch recommended by the witch we have here in the studio with us.
Kia ora.
Vixen Temple. Vixen, can you tell me what being a witch actually means for you?
Yes. Oh, I love this question. So I mentioned earlier I started exploring witchcraft when I was a teenager, but I've seen that it's definitely in my tapuna. I definitely have witchy ancestors. For me, witchcraft really is about living alongside nature. It's very anti-patriarchal and capitalistic and colonial because it's this inherently feminine idea of living with nature. And I live quite a lot by the rhythms of the moon. And I'm big into astrology and the tarot and all of those sort of things. But it's just about, like, what I love about witchcraft is it's not a religion, but there are a lot of religions out there that teach you to look outward and to look to for external validation and to see outside of yourself. And I think witchcraft has taught me that, you know, being Māori, I really resonate with the idea that everything has mana or energy or a waiora. And we are all so, we humans are nature. We are all inherently magic. And witchcraft has really taught me to look within and to know that I have all the answers within myself and that I can create the life I desire by just listening to my intuition and my internal body clock. And yeah, I just try to live in cycle with nature. You know, in winter, I really like to try slow down and be a bit more lethargic. And then in summer, I'm very social and outgoing. And I love working with energy. And, you know, like I said, being Tangata Whenua, I believe every entity out there possesses mana, possesses energy, and you can really use that to create a desired outcome. So, yeah, I've been a witch since I was, you know, I've identified as a witch since I was 17, but I think I was definitely born a witch. It's just part of who I am.
What's an example of channeling that energy to get something you want?
So I, over the years, have done a lot of sex magic, which is exactly what you'd think it is. It's, you know, if you look at magic as working with like the elements and energy to create a desired outcome, for me, sex magic, I'm using my sexual energy. So I masturbate a lot to do spells. And I've actually been doing that since I was a really little girl. When I was really young, I used to rub my legs together and feel a tingle, an explosion. And I was like, it was like magic. I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew it was magic. I just knew it felt good. And I would make wishes.
Did it work?
It worked. Like, they were silly little girl wishes like, you know, I hope I pass the test at school or I hope my crush talks to me at school. But they worked. And so as I got older.
You heard it here, folks. Give it a go. Masturbation and make a wish.
Masturbation is a form of magic. And it's actually really interesting when you like look to the history of like the witch hunts and witch trials and all that. They were so much like castration anxiety. They'd always say like women were using male sperm to, you know, use their spells. Yeah. I'm like, nah, bitch, we were using our own cum. Like we were using my own orgasm. I don't need male power. I need my own power. So for me, a big part of channeling energy is, yeah, you know, I'm very mindful that there's certain things you can't manifest your way out. Like I'm very aware of systematic oppressions, like you're not going to manifest your way out of systematic poverty or something. But I do believe in working with energy and intent to create a desired outcome. And for me, I've harnessed a lot of that energy through masturbation, or I even refer to my performance as magic. When I'm on stage, there's something quite powerful about the energy of the room. Everyone's screaming and cheering at me. And at the end of all of my acts, I let out this huge scream. And it's me, I've like sort of absorbed the energy of the crowd and I'm screaming it back at them. And I feel like we cast a spell in that moment. So if I'm doing an act about, you know, burning the patriarchy, I have the audiences with their consent. I have their mana mixed in with mine. And then it's a ritual, you know, when you look at what rituals are, it's a group of people coming together and putting their energy together to create a desired outcome. So when I'm on stage, I'm casting a spell. When I'm masturbating, I'm casting a spell. Yeah, I like to channel energy through art and jerking off, spinning the DJ.
So that's solo sex. What about sex with other people? Is that also magic?
Absolutely. I always say, you know, get consent. Ask the person whether they have whether you have their consent to, you know, use their energy. But yeah, absolutely. Like I've had, you know, group sex sessions and, you know, lots of fun things like that, or sex with partners where, yeah, I've said, hey, do you want to make this a spell? And we'll be thinking of something. And then, yeah, we, ta-da. Hi, mum, if you're listening.
Yeah, you were saying, I hope my mum's listening.
I hope she's listening. Hi, mum. She knows all this. Maybe not the masturbating from a young age thing, but I'm sure she wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, I think we don't realise what kids, you know, or we try, we pretend we don't because we were kids.
I was a very, I don't want to say a sexual child, but I, from a young age, I was a curious child. I think children are a lot more open to things. You know, there's a way to go about those conversations. But from a young age, like I said earlier, I knew from a very young age I was going to be a stripper one day. And then as I got older, I was like, I'm probably going to become a hooker as well. But like, I knew from a young age I wanted to, I felt financial compensation was required from having to coexist with men. And Now I've done it.
So you're kind of exploiting men back.
Well, yes. In its loosest terms, yeah. Like, they've exploited me my whole life, so I'm going to exploit their need for female validation.
So do you think that sex work is feminist?
Hell yeah. I don't think it needs to be feminist in order for it to be valid, but for me, absolutely. So I gave a talk last year at Vic Uni to Dr. Lindsay Armstrong's criminology students, where I talked about whorephobia, which is the hatred of sex workers, and I unpacked all of the systems that it's built on. It's xenophobia, racism, queerphobia, misogyny. When you look back at the history of sex work, it is the oldest profession. It is how for centuries, prior to a patriarchy, women lived as a matriarchal society. And in those societies, we worshipped the divine feminine. And a lot of those rituals were done through group sex. And it wasn't sex work per se, but it was, you know, ritualistic sex work, I need for a better word, or sacred prostitution, as you'd maybe call it. You could channel the divine goddess through the art of sex with a woman. And then when matriarchal societies were invaded by patriarchal societies, those high priestesses that were the quote-unquote sex workers of the time became, yeah, that's how for centuries women have survived patriarchy. I know there's that argument that we're conforming to patriarchy, but absolutely not, because patriarchy says that a woman's role is to reproduce and to be a wife and mother for men. Sex work says we should get financially compensated for that. And so for me, it doesn't have to be feminist to be valid, but for me, sex work is feminist. It's how women have survived for centuries. And it is anti-patriarchal, at least.
Mm. And like, it doesn't seem that radical to me that you should be paid. I mean, it's the whole argument we have at the moment if you're a stay-at-home parent.
Absolutely.
Like, and then it's like, well, you weren't earning. It's like, well, wait, what?
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been working my ass off.
Absolutely. Women's labor is something that patriarchy was built upon. It wouldn't exist without our free labor.
Mm.
And it's quite fascinating. The more I've researched the history of S work, especially in Western societies, I see that the medieval church was taxing sex workers and would use that money to build the churches. They would prostitute their nuns. Yeah, I'm not kidding.
Holy shit.
Yep. Medieval societies prostituted their nuns to pay for building those churches. So, you know, they were built quite literally off the backs of sex workers.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
See, I feel sorry for them because I doubt many of them chose that, right?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, there is, like, I think for centuries a lot of sex workers were very, a lot of it was by choice. It was actually, fun fact, in ancient Greece, I think the word whore just referred to any woman that lived outside of marriage to a man. So it could be someone that sold goat's milk for a living. It was just someone that lived financially independent of a man. And a lot of women over the time preferred sex work to being married to a man because they were going to get abused by that husband and have no autonomy. And sex work has historically granted women more autonomy than marriage. So, you know, I've always said I'd rather be a whore than a wife. But I think, I don't know, the nuns, maybe. I mean, they probably weren't being able to keep the money. So in a way that was actually just sex trafficking.
Slavery.
There's just slavery, absolutely. Yeah. And I don't want to deny that slavery, you know, sexual slavery did take place, but there's a difference between sex trafficking and sex work. And the sex workers were more autonomously and financially dependent than the wives of their clients.
Yeah.
Which I think is still true to this day.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's much more socially respectable though to, you know, because it seems horrific, but there's still plenty of relationships where the woman's given some pocket money or whatever.
Oh, I know, like, yeah. I mean, didn't they only make marital rape a thing in like the 70s?
Oh, yeah. It was quite late.
You could only open I think white women at least could only open bank accounts and within my nana's.
The 80s, I think.
Yeah.
It was really late.
Okay, so my mother was like
I think so.
Oh my God, no, that is wild to me. But
it is insane. And it was only quite recently too, like maybe the 70s, 80s, where a woman could no longer be counted as guilty if her husband committed a crime.
Yes.
Because they were sort of, she was owned by him and hence they were sort of one
exactly.
thing.
one unit on the side of the man. And so for me, like I said, I don't think sex work has to be feminist to be, valid, but it is feminist to me. It's very anti-patriarchal. It's anti-colonial. And I'm proud of that. I think sex worker exclusionary radical feminists seem to think that men really love sex workers, but they hate us. They hate that there's a paywall between what they think they're entitled to have just by proximity of being a man. Yeah. Where I'm, you know, like, well, you got to make it worth my while. Like, I want to get paid for this. And yeah, I over the years have endured a lot of, you know, hate from men who are bothered that I am putting a paywall between myself and them, but there are men that will pay for it, and those are the ones that I have more respect for than the ones that weren't, to be honest.
It's not like it's a mystery. It's pretty clear. I mean, do you think there's an expectation sometimes? But for me.
Yeah. What do I get? Yeah. What do I get out of this? You're not going to make me come. You're going to rub my knee and be like, oh, did you come? Like, no. Came to my senses. I'm getting out of here. Like, no, give me some money.
Oh, my God. Are you worried you might lose clients if they hear this?
No. My clients are good boys. They love me. So I might lose new clients, but they're not the clients I'd want to have anyways if they're not going to respect my values.
Nice one. Where did we get to? I want to come back to a thing. It was interesting that you used the word when you were talking about stripping and you're talking about being monstrous. And I suspect you're not using that in a really negative way.
No.
So I'm interested in that word. And I saw somewhere that you'd written that you relate to horror movie monsters as well.
Yeah. Oh, kia ora. You've done your research. I feel very flattered. So I was a big horror movie fan growing up, still am. And I think, you know, being a queer, disabled woman, I've been othered by our patriarchal society in many ways. And for me, monster movies really, I think, especially people with disabilities and queer people, we see ourselves in any othered character in media. And so monster movies and horror movies are a really good way of exploring those themes. And so for me, I really love deities and goddess worship. And I'm always very attracted to the goddesses like Lilith or Hine Nui Te Po or Kali Ma, who are considered monstrous feminine in the sense that, you know, when you think of femininity, it's usually this dainty, soft, sweet thing. And these are women that are angry and, you know, Medusa, like just angry and scary and monstrous, and their power comes from that. And so I, you know, in the strip club, I had to be this like pretty little dainty woman. But through Vixen Temple, I get to be a monster. I feel the most sexy when I'm like naked, drenched in blood. It's just, I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. It's just, I just feel really like, damn, I look good right now. And I'm screaming, and you know, I love that. I love it so much. I think it's like the wahine in me. I love to scream and stick my eyes out really wide and look like a monster. And it's just, it's so,
pukana.
Yeah, but I wouldn't pukana because I'm a wahine, but just I love looking feral. And I think a lot of that comes from this idea that patriarchy, you know, women are meant to be pretty and palatable all the time and submissive and subordinate. The monstrous feminine really leans into like, fuck that. I'm, you know, I create life. You should be fucking scared of me because I could take it from you. You come from me. So
yeah,
watch me, try me. Bitch.
So that whole sort of macabre and monstrous stuff, that's really part of your performance, it seems.
Yes.
And I saw that I didn't know about this thing. What was it called? Oh, God. Like the balls that you've been part of?
Oh, the Devil's Ballroom and goth ball. Yeah. So Nocturne Sanctum is, so my burlesque mother is Nocturnus, and she runs this theatre company called Nocturne Sanctum, and every year they do, there's one coming up this Saturday actually, the Devil's Ballroom, and they also do the Angel's Ballroom, and she's recently, in recent years, been doing Concept Stage Spot, which is a variety show of all sex workers. But the Devil's Ballroom in Tamaki Makaurau was one of the first shows I headlined, where Nocturnus really took a, you know, she really like gave me an opportunity. She'd seen me perform once, and then she headlined me in the Devil's Ballroom, and I was like, what the hell? Like, you're really trusting me here. And I did this act where it was like a Red Riding Hood theme of me. It was about being sexually assaulted, and I had this decapitated male head, and I carved the initials of the guy that assaulted me on it, and I drenched myself in his blood, and it was really reclaiming that I performed the song The Big Bad Wolf, how I have this poem where I talked about for a long time I thought he was the big bad wolf, but I realized actually I'm the big bad wolf. I'm the scary thing. He should be afraid of me. I have power that he can never take. And that act was my first proper, I'd say, ritual that I realized, like, yeah, this is what I want to do with Vixen Temple. She's about honoring that rage in me. So I love the Devil's Ballroom. It's such a fun event to be a part of. I'm really grateful to Nocturne Sanctum. Yeah, Nocturne is always, you know, headlines me and books me to MC, and she just really has helped me form my career over the years. I think it's really cool to be able to perform to the goth alternative community. I think they really understand my art the most because I am goth and alternative myself. So whenever I get to perform to, yeah, the queer goth community, it's like, hell yeah, my people.
And you also write?
Yes, I'm a writer. Long before I wanted to be a stripper or performer, my first thing I ever wanted to be as a little girl was a writer. And so getting to a point now where I get paid to write is so huge for my inner child. I love it so much. I love the power of words. I'm a Gemini rising, so I'm ruled by Mercury, which is the god of communication and storytelling. And I love, yeah, I just love storytelling and using words to communicate ideas to people.
I mean, this is probably just me being from a different world, but I had to laugh when I saw that one of the places you write is like the adult toy megastore.
Oh, yes.
I was just like, in fact, it's a megastore. I was just like, had a chuckle.
I write for a sex toy company. I also have a code, Vixen Temple 10, get 10% off your sex toy.
Oh, seriously, that's so cool.
Yeah, I write for a lot of blogs. I write for Tristlink, which is a Australian-based escorting site, and they have articles that sex workers write. So I write a lot about sex work discourse. I write for the D-List, a disability company, a magazine here in Aotearoa. So I write, yeah, mostly I write about like sex work, feminism, witchcraft, and disability rights and justice, my favorite things to talk about.
You must be extremely busy.
Yeah, like, yes, but it's just, I think I couldn't live any other way with my ADHD. When I'm not doing things, it's probably very colonial, patriarchal, capitalist of me, but when I'm not doing things, I get really depressed. I just love to be creating, whether it's an act or writing or whatever, or doing activism. When I'm not doing stuff, yeah, I get really depressed. But I am trying to get better at taking time to rest and not push myself beyond my limits as I'm getting older and I'm disabled. I'm like, girl, slow down. But I just love doing. I love creating, and it's so much a part of who I am. It's something that, you know, when I can monetize it, awesome, great, because that means I can pay my bills. But it's just who I am. I think it's what keeps me alive. And when I'm not doing those things, like, I want to die. Like, it's like, oh God, I'm not doing what I was put on this earth to do, which is writing and performing and burning the patriarchy.
Yeah. And you're advocating all the time. And I was sort of thinking beforehand, like, you're fighting all these good fights. Are you, you know, exhausted by that? But I can see that you're not, but actually you're energized by it.
Oh, killed it. I think it keeps me young by sticking up and staying true to my values. I think it keeps me young and youthful. People always say, like, you do not look your age. I'm like, it's because I implement boundaries and I just say things. I don't keep things in. I fuck that. So yeah, but you know, in saying that, it does weigh on me sometimes. It can be draining. But I am getting better at implementing self-care things that are long-term sustainable for me.
I guess it's even more depressing and exhausting to see all the bad things in the world and not be trying to address
them. Oh, kia ora. I'm so glad you said that. Actually, you're so right. I think that's the biggest thing for me. I get more drained by not doing something. I'm not someone that likes to look away from the dark. I want to stare into the belly of the beast and do something. Otherwise, I feel helpless and drained. I feel best when I'm in community, surrounded by others, doing the mahi, because I don't want to be complicit in this world that I'm so against.
You're doing gigs all around New Zealand, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a real sort of community that you work with mostly here in Te Whanganui o Tara?
Yes, I'm a part of a lot of communities, which I'm very grateful for, because when I was a little girl, like, I didn't have a lot of friends growing up. And so I'm a part of the queer community, the sex work community, the drag community, the burlesque cabaret community. I've recently gotten really close with the Latin queers based here in Punaki, and that means I get more involved with the migrant community, and just it's just really cool to you know, be a part of so many communities that I am in, but also communities that I don't identify with, but there's so many parallels between our lived experiences. We're just all othered in so many ways. So I feel very blessed and lucky. I'm quite an introverted extrovert. I love my me time, but also I'm a Leo sun and I love being around others. And, you know, my inner child, every time I'm in community with people, it's like, see, you're likable. You made friends. You're not a freak. You just needed to find other, well, you are a freak. You just had to find other freaks.
I feel like, yeah, eventually when you get to a certain age, you start being a magnet for other people like you.
Absolutely. And that's something I'm really proud of. Like, I just am myself and I attract people that think that I'm cool. And it's like, oh, you're cool too. And then we get to make good friends and I get to be in community with so many rad people that they heal my inner child in more ways than I can ever articulate. So to all of those people, if they're listening, I really love you. And you keep me young and you keep me going.
Yay. I wanted to do a shout out before we finish to your mum for that awesome top you're wearing.
Yes. I'm wearing a rainbow crocheted top that my mum makes. She's big on crochet. And I was saying to Sadie that my mother, she lives in Utiputi. And I tell her that crochet is so big in Wellington that if she moved here, she'd be cool. My mum's like, well, isn't it like a little old lady thing to do? I'm like, nah, it's the shit up here. You'd be the shit. So yeah. I asked her to make me something for gay pride and she crocheted me a rainbow crochet top and so many things I own are crocheted by my mother. And I love her. She is the definition of a gay ally. She is the straightest like woman, but she is so, she's an ally and I love her.
Can't be that straight to have made that top.
She also made like three queer daughters, but like,
yeah, super cool. Go Vixen's mum.
Yay, Mama Temple.
So before the end of this, I'm going to solemnly swear to play Spellbound by Susie and the Banshees.
Love them.
Yes, because that seems very fitting. Mm. But so we probably have like 1 minute before that just to quickly do a bit of promo. I wanted to give the address for your blog, vixentempleblog.wordpress.com. Yeah.
Yes, correct. Absolutely. I've switched to WordPress because Wix is Israel. So screw that. I've switched to WordPress.
There's a few things I need to switch right now.
I know. I'm on the boycott list, but I'm big on the boycott list. Don't boycott me. You can find me mostly, I'm very active on Instagram at vixentemple.666. I've launched a new podcast with my friend Madeline Rose, stripped_unscripted. And check us out at the Catherine Mansfield Show next week. Tickets available on the Catherine Manson website. But yeah, thank you so much for having me on the show. I love talking to you. You're so much fun. You have beautiful energy. So kia ora for having me.
Thanks.
No, thank you.
It's been awesome. And I just feel like I've learned a lot. And you can ask you anything. It's brilliant. Great interview subject.
Kia ora, I'm an open book. Aroha nui, tēnā koe.
Thank you. It's Vixen Temple. You've been listening to B-Side Stories on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. Listen in next week. I'm not sure who we've got on yet, but it will be someone cool for sure. Going to be a tough act to follow, though.
Yeah, not as cool as me.
Not as cool as Vixen, but maybe nearly. Okay, here is Spellbound by Susie and the Banshees.
From the cradle bars comes a beckoning voice that's then spinning. You have no choice. You have no choice, you hear laughter.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.